The White Network presents Saturday Afternoon with Carolyn. Your host, Carolyn Yeager.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you for joining me today, this Saturday, March 23rd, 2013, for a returning appearance of my and our very good friend, Vincent Renoir of Paris, France, and his delightful partner, Marie. At this point, I have to stop and tell you that I have a temporary disappointment for you, because due to a time confusion, which shouldn't have happened, but it did, and I'm blaming daylight savings time for this, it appears that it is not 8 p.m. right now in Paris, but 7 p.m. And according to my Skype page, my Skype contact page with Vincent in Paris, it says that it is 8 p.m. now. And that's what I was going by, and they obviously didn't check it out either, and I told her to call at 7:45 their time, thought that would work. It is easy to get confused with these times, and when they change times, like daylight savings time, and, on Skype, it changes for me, at least I think it does, or my time changes. I'm not sure what changes. She has not called in yet, and they are not here yet, but I have sent, along with some Skype messages, an email to them, which is, from one Gmail account to another Gmail account and should be there, but she's probably not even home herself. And I know he wasn't going to get home until shortly before 8 because Vincent spends all day Saturday, tutoring, all day. Tutoring kids. That's how he manages to make his living. And I guess they're not here. Their Skype account is not open yet. But they have the messages, and so I expect, they're both very, very dependable. And she takes care of all this stuff, too, very well. And so I assume that she will be calling in at the latest in 45 minutes or 40 minutes now, and we will have them here. In the meantime, I'm really sorry. I feel terrible about this, but I'm in a pretty good mood today and feeling pretty chipper, so it's not hitting me too hard. Probably more of a disappointment to you, because I have done a lot of I put a lot of stuff on my notes page, so I can talk about quite a bit in the meantime, while we are waiting and get a lot of the maybe introductory stuff out of the way, because, I know that they will be calling in, eventually and according to, if not, maybe even sooner if she gets home and sees my messages or turns on her computer or whatever and sees my messages, but at least by a quarter, our Eastern Standard Time, would be a quarter to two. So then we'll be going, two to four, a quarter to three. It's quarter to two my time will be. So, the time is difficult. Okay, I'll just leave it at that and go on to say that, this is I'm not using Marie's. I have all this I was going to say. I'll just go ahead with it and see how, continue until they are here. And I do apologize to the listeners. I'm not using Marie's last name. She might, but I don't, because I'm not sure. I've seen a couple names for her, and I'm not sure which is her name, and I'm not sure maybe she wants it to be used, but it's not out of lack of respect for her importance in the revisionist work they do, which which, you know, she's very much a part of that with him now. It's not out of that I'm just calling her Marie as though she's not all that important, because she is, but I just, it's probably better if I don't. Anyway, can find that out later, but let me just say by way of some introduction that this is Vincent's fifth guest appearance with me, and it might even be the sixth. I really didn't go back and count them, but he's been on with me quite a few times. And the last time, it was in October of last year, 5 months ago. And he continues to work indefatigably to bring into the light the truth about World War II in a country, France, that has strong official sanction against that truth. Correspondingly, he has suffered a great deal of persecution, but has not by that been dissuaded from continuing to research and publish, which he continues to this day. And he has some new material out in the way of videos. You know, Vincent turned to videos as a way to reach more people and younger people, and he feels that they're doing very well. Of course, they're all in French. And so that, you know, they're doing very well among French speaking people. But, you know, it's not the easiest thing for them to change them into, other languages, even though there are people willing to do it because they're so busy. It's always with their latest project and output. And, I think that seems to be like me. You know, I want to always write more and do more rather than, somehow get what I have done out better. That's better than it is out there. Maybe I should spend more time doing that, but I don't want to do that. I get new ideas and I want to do new things. And I think that's the way Vincent is. anyway, we're going to be talking about some of his newest videos, that happen to be about Ordor, Sorglain, O-R. Let me spell it out for you. Where is this spelled? O-R-A-D-O-U-R. If you want to look it up, you know, in your search or something, Sur, S-U-R, and Glane, G-L-A-N-E. It's usually spelled with a hyphen between the middle word, and the other two words, but it's not necessary. Now, you know, he's got a new video out and let me go to that. You know, his website, Vincent Renoir's website, is his official website is www.phdnm. N as in Nancy, M as in Maxwell, phdnm.org. And he has these videos. Of course, it's all in French. He has these videos. He has a package that he's selling now, and he should sell them because they need to earn a living. You know, they need to earn money. And they've got I'm not sure I was going to let them explain all that. But if you scroll down, you come to some other things, and quite a few. That's his regular, what I'm familiar with seeing on his regular website. So he's put this video offer at the top, and he calls it the expose of the Ordor Sorglain affair, or Glane. I'm not sure how that would be pronounced in French. I guess it wouldn't be Glane. It would be Glan. And I think there's new, you know, they have a new video out, which you can get to by, well, it's right underneath there. And, I think they have some, brought out some new things. But I'm going to tell you what I know about it. You know, he calls it, they mention that he calls it, un demi-siècle mise en scène. Mise en scène. Well, forgive my bad pronunciation, but, you know, that is a half century it was a half century that this has been going on, and it's a misrepresentation of the physical setting of an action is what that kind of means. otherwise the background, you know, and that the background is never being given. And it's not been truthfully told. And he, that's what he's doing, and that's what he's further doing in his new video. Because, and I'll get into this here real quick. I want to mention that at scrapbookpages.com, the creator of scrapbookpages.com, which is just that, www.scrapbookpages.com, and if you go there and on the first page there's a search window, real obvious there. If you just type in Orador, O-R-A-D-O-U-R, Sorglan, and hit the find or whatever, it'll take you. And he's got a whole, if you find the index to it, he's got about 8 or 10 pages of with different headings on this. And he's got the official story, which is not too interesting because it's not very true. And then he's got a lot. He's got the SS. The two that I would recommend would be SS version of Orador Sorglan. If you keep looking around there, you'll find it. And the other one is the Vincent Renoir. It's titled, Scrapbook Pages. Go. Synopsis of Revisionist Claims by Vincent Renoir. Gotta close this now. And then he says, warning, Renoir's claims are against the law in France. He has to put that, well, he's a little worried, so he's afraid of being seen as a revisionist. So whatever he puts on that is revisionist, he makes sure that he acts like he doesn't believe it himself. But anyway, that's very good information there that you can learn about by just reading that. He's done a very good job of telling both sides of the story. And we're concerned with the revisionist side of the story, truthfully. And I would just say that I wrote a list here, good thing I did, of the main problems with the story, which I'll go through now. That is that the thing you have to remember is that there was a court case about it was charges brought against the SS and in this French court, you know, after the war, fairly long after the war, not real long, but, and it was to find out who was responsible, you know, for the death of all these people, this massacre that took place there, supposedly. And the court found, naturally, that the SS was guilty of war crimes, I was going to have him tell us all this, but I'm not sure now if any of them were hung. I have probably have that further down, or if they were just imprisoned, and they imprisoned a lot of these SS men for life, but then they released them in the 1950s because everybody always knows that these men are not really guilty of anything. But, you know, they have to go through all these motions to make it look like they're doing something and that they are guilty. But the records of this court, all the transcripts, everything, it was probably closed. Not that many people were allowed in, I'm not sure. But the records are sealed until 2053, and that was on the orders of Charles de Gaulle. Yeah, I couldn't think of the middle part. Charles de Gaulle ordered that they be sealed until 2053. So you've still got 30 years to wait in order to find out what's in these records, if they even let you see them then. You know, the British do the same thing. They seal them for 100 years. I suppose this trial must have been in 1953. And then how they get away with that, I don't know, but they do. So you can't see the record to find out, the trial record, to find out what people said and, you know, help fill out your version of the story from that. Now, another thing is that the French resistance that was fighting was illegal, But it is never seen as illegal, according to the French or according to any of the Allied versions or anything. They don't care about that, you know. And because the reason they're illegal is because there was an armistice signed between France and Germany when Germany defeated France in 1940 and the French surrendered. And the French government signed an armistice saying, oh, it was had things that, you know, that they would that they would lay down all their arms, that they would not fight and stir up anything against the German occupation, and that there wouldn't be any kind of force supported against the Germans. And of course, they didn't do that because the British helped to form this French resistance, which was not all French, by the way, even the people in it, and certainly not down in the area that we're talking about today. They were, they were not supposed to be able to do that. Of course, there's something about the Germans were only in control of the upper part, the northern part of France. France is a pretty large country. And the southern part, they weren't. They didn't go down and subdue that. So maybe Oradour is in that part, and I didn't check that out either because I thought, you know, Vincent would tell us. So that's something we have to find out. And also, I will welcome. No, I can't. I can't do that. We'll have phone calls in the second hour, but I can't. If I allow you to call in the first hour. And then hang up, I won't be hearing my cues and the music and so on, and that always throws me off a little bit. And that's why we don't take calls in the first hour. Until that all gets fixed, which we have to light a fire under Tan. He's, right now he's not even home. See, he's a busy person too, so, you know, it's hard to get all this done. Anyway, the other thing, the French resistance should have been outlawed, but they didn't do it, you know, they didn't back it up. So they were active and they were interfering with German troops more and more, and particularly once the Allies got their beachhead in the European continent in the so-called D-Day invasion. So, and it was then that Eisenhower proclaimed that the French guerrilla fighters were now recognized as some kind of French military forces. And, you know, there's no way he could have done that, but he did it. See, that's the thing. If you do what you want to do. Now, the Germans didn't recognize that. They didn't accept that because they knew that that was not legal. But Eisenhower proclaimed it. And once they won the whole war and in the Nuremberg tribunals and so on, they accepted that that was okay for him to do that. And therefore, these guerrillas that were by now being because they are getting lots of aid from Britain or through Britain, you know, probably from a lot of places through Britain, money, weapons, food, all kinds of stuff was being dropped by parachute for these groups, and they were doing a lot of damage to the Germans, and now the Germans had this had to regroup for the to fight the Allied invasion, the you know, of the continent, and they were giving therefore, you know, the interference of the resistance and the guerrilla fighters was ramped up, and it was really brutal. It was really brutal what was going on, but and yet all they were not found to be having, you know, any harm that Germans did to these resistance fighters was seen as a war crime in the Nuremberg trial. So this is where, you know, the whole legal basis for this is just so screwed up and so wrong, it's all illegal, and it's victors claiming things that are illegal as being okay and getting away with it. So, you know, one thing I wanted to bring out, and since I'm here by myself now, I can really bring it out, is that, you know, Eisenhower is a war criminal. Dwight Eisenhower, who was president of the United States for 8 years, from 1952 to 1960, was a bona fide war criminal. And I think it's time for there to be a movement or a big push of some kind to start talking about that and claim it and denounce the man and call for it. Now, you know, other groups, Jews are good at this. Call for him to be investigated and the record to be cleaned up and so on, because he is a bona fide war criminal. And I think a lot of noise ought to be made about this. Now, excuse me while I get some water. Another thing I would like to bring up about him is that so many of our you know, allies of our cause who are anti-Jewish, let's say their main thing is that they're anti-Jewish. They love to praise Eisenhower for that one sentence, or maybe it was two sentences, that he stuck in his final farewell when he was leaving office, probably in 59 or 60, to the nation, farewell to the nation speech, in which he said that warned Americans to beware of the military-industrial complex. And, you know, just that little thing that he stuck in there, very, very short, didn't really elaborate, somehow, because people know that there is a military-industrial complex, and he knew it, and he, in my opinion, he said that in order to make his own record look better. Because, you know, he was supposedly this war hero, and then he was this, you know, wonderful president that everybody loved, and he had a few good things or decent things that he did while he was in office. He wasn't as bad as some of them today, maybe, but his whole record was terrible, and he was a big liar. And he, you know, that does not absolve him from all that he did. And yet to these people, it does. They'll bring that up like, oh, Eisenhower warned us, you know, and that was so good of him to do that. But he could have warned us a lot sooner, and he could have done a lot more about it if he was sincere about it, which he wasn't. So, you know, I think people should be a little more active in explaining what's going, you know, the real truth when other people bring this up about Eisenhower and try to make him look good, or think they actually think that he was a good guy. He wasn't a good guy ever. And to my, I think he should be called a war criminal. I think those words should be used, because that's what they did to all these Germans. So that's number three problem with the story, is that what Eisenhower's proclamation that the French guerrilla fighters were now recognized as French military forces. Well, how could there be French military forces when France was still, you know, under that armistice agreement? Well, they just wiped that out. You know, that didn't matter to them. That didn't matter to the Allies. So they just crossed that out. Now it was null and void for them. So number four is that, Renoir published a book in June 1977. Some of you might not be real clear about this, because I wasn't, about exactly what he's done about this, but it was a 450-page book published in 1997 in Belgium, and the title was Les Mesures Acres L'Orador. And I'm not, say again, I was going to ask him, I don't know what acre means. The measure, something about, but it was a book about, it was a book he wrote about the research he had done into Orador and the action or the event, the massacre at Orador. Like I had read all this, you know, he had something on the internet, and it had been translated into English. And I read all that quite a lot of years ago, before I ever really got into this, although I was into it to that degree of reading things. But it was taken off, it was taken down, and so I've forgotten a lot of the details, but I have refreshed myself. But even just speaking, what I have written, I can't remember at the very moment I'm speaking to get it exactly straight, so I have to Wait till I get to that part. Anyway, he published this 450-page book about Oradora and, in June, 97. Think how long ago that was he was doing this. And in September, 3 months later, its sale was forbidden in France. It was already censored and banned. And then some friends of his, or a group of activists, they want to make out they're his friends. Maybe they're friends, but they were some activists, the best thing to call them, who made a video about his book, you know, on the, based on his book. They did this the next year in 1998 and 1999 and, illustrated his arguments, in his book. And 1 month after this video went on the market, probably mostly to be sold because there wasn't that big of a bunch of people on the internet looking at things. There was no YouTube then, but they had made this. Anyway, this video was banned in France 1 month later. And so, you know, the French are not about, and, you know, as you must know, Vincent Renoir is French and has always been French and always lived in France and still does. You know, but they will not allow any kind of, just like with the Holocaust altogether. It is, they decided that they can't put down the arguments. They can't answer, you know, what these revisionist researchers have come up with. And so they have resorted from the beginning to just banning it and letting the courts handle it, having it be a legal government sponsored issue. And that's how they do it. So, a final thing that I've used for, about this, why there are big problems with this official story is that, there's a sworn affidavit by a German, Bundeswehr, member. That is the post-war German military named Eberhard Mathis, and he was not a Nazi. I mean, he was in the Bundeswehr, and in when was it? I don't have the date down here. I have that down further, but it was like in the 1960s. Yeah, maybe around 65 or so. He had occasion to go to Oradour, Sorgland in France, and he had been to France many times in relation to his work. In the military, and he didn't have, you know, he wasn't a Holocaust revisionist or anything like that, or a World War II revisionist. But when he went there, some residents of the town were so friendly to him, and he went to, you know, he was in that Oradour town, which is a memorial now. You know, I guess I could make that clear. They have, not destroyed that town. It was kind of semi-destroyed, but there's a lot of stuff there remaining, and it has been left there as a memorial, and there is a memorial committee and so on, just like the concentration camps, you know, are memorials now. And people go there and walk through it and visit it, and he says they're selling, you know, they're selling snacks and stuff at the entrance, and also these pamphlets at that time in the 60s. Somebody was selling pamphlets that told the whole story, you know, the official story of what happened there. And he said they were selling them amazingly cheap. That is, they were practically giving them away because they wanted people to read it, you know, which they do at the concentration camps, too. They, you know, read their side of it. And so he was reading it in his automobile, I guess, and these people came up to him. All right, here we got the call. I'm just getting into my story here. Let me take this. See, I've got to get my Skype page up. All right, answering it. Came soon. I'm so slow. Okay, enter. Let's see what we get. Well, where is it? I don't see it here. The White Network. What happened? Oh, wait a minute. Go down further. Oh, I forgot my space. Okay. Gosh darn it. Space. I wonder why I have to put a space in. No, I got it. There they are. Hello there.
Hi.
Hi, Marie.
Yes.
I'm so sorry.
If I am correct, we are 1 hour late.
Yes, but you know, I've just been going on here and giving all my background information. So, it's fine. You called in earlier than I said. I explained to the listeners, of which we have a nice group of listeners here. I explained to them it was my fault, the time mix up. I didn't check it out well enough. So, I had as an hour off, so I told you you'd probably be calling in about 45 minutes, but now you've called in 30 minutes, so it's not bad. I'm trying to find my,
But Vincent is not here.
Well, that's all right. Yeah. Well, that's all right. I didn't think he would be here until on top of the hour, right?
Okay. Shall I stay or what? What do you prefer?
No, stay. Yeah, stay. Okay. Don't hang up because now we've got you. We don't want to lose the call.
Okay.
So everything is fine. So how are you, Marie?
I am fine but tired. It was a very long day today.
Yes, I know. Well, you know, I explained that too, that it was a long day and you probably weren't even home yet. And Vincent wouldn't be getting home until at your time, 8 o'clock, and he had a long day. So
yes, he still has to eat a little bit, but it will be okay. It will be very quick.
Well, you know,
we are very sorry.
Well, it's not your fault. You called. You know, you were calling when I told you. So it's really all my fault. But I'm not. It's daylight savings time's fault. I told him. But I was going through some information, and let's see, there were a few things I wasn't sure about. I was going to ask, but now I don't even know what they were. I was giving my main problems with the official story about Orador. Well, you can fill us in as to this new video that Vincent has and you have put out. Is it new information, or what is the purpose of when you... He wanted to talk about it, I know that.
So, it is a new video with new information, yes.
Okay.
At the time he made this video, the first video, so the video is just a conference, the first one. It was filmed by some amateur, do you understand?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. It was kind of amateurish.
Yes. Today it's still amateurish, but Vincent made some discoveries, new discoveries. During, in 50 years, he made these new discoveries, and he put these discoveries in this new video. And this new video, moreover, is... it's better, how should I say, better done, better realized than the first one.
Yes, that's perfectly spoken. Yes, we understand. Okay, that's good. Well, that is what I thought so. So it's not just the same video. It's a new one with new material and better done. Now I looked at the 8 minutes some seconds video. Is that the one? And of course it's in French. I couldn't understand it very well, but I did think it looked very good. And you were speaking some, and he was speaking some.
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
Okay. And people, well, I think it's a longer one. I think that's the one that you can watch on your website and on YouTube and on your video channel that you have. You can watch that, but the one, to get the full one, you buy it. Is that correct?
Yes. For the first time, we tried to make an experience.
Experiment, yes.
Experiment, sorry. The experiment is to, how should I say, to propose people to buy the video to see if people are motivated
To spend some, to part with some money in order to learn about this. And it shouldn't, everyone shouldn't be thinking that it can all be free. I did express some about that in the beginning, that, that you two, were working all the time with this material and, you needed money. You know, if people can either donate, or a good way to do things is to have them pay for the product rather than to give the product away for free and then hope for donations, right?
Yes, we wanted to, I'm sorry, I have to go to the door because...
Yeah, go ahead.
Sorry.
Go ahead. That's all right, I'll take over. I was just telling you, ladies and gentlemen, about Eberhard Mathis. And what I was saying, what I didn't quite finish, was that as he was reading this booklet, which he was, you know, taking for being truthful, French people from Ordor came up to him and told him, don't believe what you read, everything you read. And they were kind of, you know, they finally came right out and told him that they didn't, that wasn't right what they had in those booklets, and that the official story wasn't true. And they told him other things. And these were people who had lived there and were in their 50s and 60s then in 1965 or so when he was there. And he put this in a sworn affidavit and stated all this. And that is on the website of Scrapbook Pages too, amongst the other side of the story articles. So these are very strong things that have been taking place. But this was quite a while ago. Are you back, Marie?
Yes, I'm back.
Okay.
Vincent is eating, but he will come very soon.
Well, tell him to take his time. I'm glad he's back already. So that would be wonderful. We're looking forward to that. But he doesn't have to rush, and we're enjoying talking to you. So you continue with where, if you remember where you were talking about your experiment and how,
we need, as you said, we need money. Mm-hmm. And we wanted with this video, with this new video, to test people, sort of. But we really need money, and we are a little bit disappointed because people are waiting. They know that the video will be one day, sooner or later, will be for free on YouTube, and they just wait. They are just waiting.
It's terrible, isn't it?
So we are disappointed, but we want to wait 2 weeks, approximately 2 weeks, and then we will put the video online for free.
Well, now you're ruining your experiment here. If you're telling people to wait only 2 weeks and then they're going to see the whole thing.
Vincent will explain you why.
Okay.
Yeah, we want to wait, but we also want to share the information.
Yes, and also if somebody buys the video, then they can put it on YouTube.
Yes, so unless we are making this moment.
Yeah, so it's a difficult thing. This is a good time to bring up the donation thing, that because you have changed your email address with PayPal for donations.
Yes.
Yeah. And so if people, and I do urge people who do use PayPal to go there and make a donation. And this time, instead of, in your name, Marie, which I had given out previously, it's now back to Vincent's email.
Yes.
And it's vincentrenoir@gmx.fr. And so that's, ladies and gentlemen, that's VincentReynard. NOUARD. Make sure you get that spelling right. @gmx.fr. And I'll have it on the program page. So go there and send something, please. I know I'm also disappointed that when I've had you as guests on my programs, and I spend a bit of time telling people about how to make a donation and so on. And if we've had
nice
other ways besides PayPal. And yet, again, the results have been very disappointing. You know, this internet generation, and we're probably all guilty, but you know, we're so used to having things now for free.
Yes.
And we just don't, it's hard for people to part with their money. But the thing, another thing is that these are in French. And they're not, you know, so English speaking people aren't going to really get much out of it.
Yes.
So
we know that too.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. But we can't do that much because we are very busy. We are and we need help, but practical help, as I told you last time. And we have people who are very nice who translate the videos, but then we need other people, and these people are missing, to make the subtitles, you know, to
uh-huh.
realize the subtitles, and these people are missing. We don't have time for this. It's not possible for us. We have too much to do. So these people are welcome if they can help us for this. And then, because we have translations in English, we have them.
Mm-hmm. Yes, right.
But some of them, but not all of them, but some of them, but we can't.
So you need people to actually make the videos, not to do the translation. You have had people helping you with translation, but what you need is, to make subtitles.
Yes.
Would they have to be working with you? Could you give them that job on their own, or how does that work? And also, if people want to write to you about this, they can write to this Vincent
yes.
Renoir at gmx.fr, correct?
Yes. We are using software, a simple one, but if people want to help us for this, for subtitles, they have to have the we can help them, but we can't buy them the software or so they have to have the software.
Okay.
They have to know how to use it, because we can't help for this. It's we have one software and we don't have time to use it because it's we are too busy to, we are running, how should I say, for money, we are looking for money everywhere,
oh.
So we don't have them for subtitles.
Mm-hmm. Well, would somebody who has like Photoshop type software, would they be what was, because I know a lot of people that have that, or is it something else?
I don't know. Maybe I don't know the name of the software. Vincent will tell you. I don't think you need Photoshop. I don't think Photoshop will work for this.
Okay. Let's remind me to ask him when he gets.
Yes. Up. Yes. Yes. I will.
Okay.
I will.
All right. Very good. Well, you know, I finished. Let's see. Now, going on with Vincent's history,
yes.
Just help me with this. After I got as far as, I got to where he was, where did I get? They accused him of, I don't know if I did this. They accused, no, I didn't do this. After his book came out in 1997 and he was on trial in 1998 and stuff. Let's see, I'm ahead of myself here for some reason. But French authorities accused him of denying a war crime. But then they had to amend it to approval of a war crime. And in 2001, his residence in Brussels was searched by Belgian policemen on orders from the French. And they seized about 60 cardboard boxes containing books, papers, recordings. And also the offices of his publisher in Antwerp were searched. And his passport was confiscated at that time, and he was forbidden to ever go to the area of France where Oradour is located. You know, how they can do that kind of thing, but that's how they do in these democratic countries. I don't know how much France considers itself a democracy, though. But and then the first court proceedings against him took place in November 2003, right?
Yes.
And Vincent wrote that the judge ensured that he could not defend himself by interrupting him continuously.
Yes, that's yes. right.
And then on December 12th, he was convicted of approval of a war crime, and he was sentenced to 1 year in prison, with 9 months of that on probation, so it would only be 3 months in prison, but probation is almost as bad as still being in prison. Maybe it's even worse, because you still have, you have to support yourself while you're not able to do anything. And he was fined 10,000 euro. Well, he appealed. And because he appealed in 2004, they increased his sentence to 2 years, but reduced the fine to 3,000 euro. And here's where the money went. Here's who brought these charges, I guess. The three civil parties that were involved in this lawsuit: Marcel Dartout, or Dout, how you pronounce
Dartout.
It? Dartout. Dartout. Yes. A survivor of the massacre. You know, he was one of those survivors. And then the International League Against Racism and Anti-Semitism. And, you know, there's one of those in Austria, too, that I've written about. It's headed by a Jew named Robert Eiter. It's the same, just about exactly the same name. And, you know, when they say international, you know they're talking about communists. And the third one was the Friends of the Association of the Memory of the Deportation. And this is interesting because, so there's two associations and this one survivor from the town. And the deportation, they call it that because it was, what it means is sending captured French resistance heroes, they call them, to Nazi concentration camps. So what the National Socialists, or what the SS, Waffen-SS did was, instead of executing these resistance fighters, which they could have done, they sent them to their concentration camps where they survived, you know. Struthof, Natzweiler, Struthof, Buchenwald, and Dachau. But then they complained that they were not given the rights of POWs because they were now claiming that these guerrillas were regular, members of the military, and so they should be POWs instead of being treated as illegal combatants, which they were. So all of this background is just sleazy as all get out. Do I hear Vincent showing up?
Oui, hello, Karine, I am here.
Hello, I know I should pronounce your name Vincent, right?
Yes, you should pronounce it Vincent. Okay, I'm very sorry,
No, don't waste any time apologizing. As I said, it was my fault. I gave you the wrong time. So I'm glad that you're here early. So, good.
Okay, good. Mm-hmm. So, thank you very much, Caroline, for having invited me to speak about Oradour.
Right. All right. Well, thank you for coming on to speak about it. Now, Marie helped me to understand all about your new DVD, and that what we see now is a short version, kind of introductory to it, and the long version, it's over an hour at least, is for sale. But she was also explaining that it will soon be going on the internet free, but they were hoping that people would still buy it because you two, you know, you need money for your work, and you're disappointed in the donations and the support that you're getting, the financial support.
I will put it on internet for perhaps in 2 weeks, because I see that a lot of people look at the advert. My little film about it, but very, very few people buy my DVD. I need money, but I don't work for money, so I will give it free in 2 weeks. But I am sad because we work a lot for that, and I don't understand. I think that people think that we don't need money to live. We don't need money to make research, to sleep at night in a house, to eat, to have a car. I think that people think that we are spirits, only spirits, and that we don't need money.
Well, I think, Vincent, as I said to Marie, I think a lot of it is that, if you don't speak French, and I don't, and so many, and you don't understand French, so many, like, say, Americans or English-speaking people don't. They don't feel like they get enough out of it to pay for it. So we were talking about your problems in making translated versions of these things, and she said that you don't have enough volunteers, or you don't have any volunteers who will make the subtitles and things like that, and that's what you really need.
Oh yes, we need we. It would be wonderful if somebody could make subtitles or a translation, and both a translation for all your films, and particularly for my DVD on Oradour, because Oradour in France, and in Europe, Oradour is the French Auschwitz. It's the same thing. In Poland they have Auschwitz, and in France we have Oradour. And
yes.
I think that if we can win, if we can tell the truth and win about Oradour, we won't win about gas chambers, but we will be in a good position after. If in France if the world know that Oradour was a lie, and a very, very, very large lie, it will be easier about gas chambers. I only say that it will be easier. I don't think we will have victory in 1 or 2 years, because with gas chambers, the political threat is more evident. There is Israel, Jews, etc. In Oradour, you don't have any Jews. There's nothing about Israel, etc. But I think that Oradour is a very, very good thing, a very, very good thing to review, because it's a big target for us.
You know, as I'm listening to you speak, you know, I wonder why you couldn't do a version, even with you speaking in English and Marie, of your same video, and put a different soundtrack in which you're speaking in English, or have somebody else read your part in English.
Yes.
How difficult is that? That would be better than subtitles.
I'm sure that it would be better than subtitles, but we need a volunteer, and we can't find one. I know Carlos Porter, but Carlos Porter have a lot of things to do, and he can't help us. He helped us for one video, my video about Himmler. But I didn't yet put subtitles. I would prefer, yes, you're right, I would prefer a person to make a new soundtrack. It would be wonderful. And if somebody wants to put a soundtrack, I can give him the video. It's no problem for me.
Well, I'm gonna volunteer Hadding Scott right now. You know, Hadding Scott, who works with us here at the White Network, I don't know how well he speaks French. He pronounces it well, but he reads it and he can speak it somewhat. And he's knowledgeable about French, and he's got a wonderful speaking voice and reading voice, and he's altogether on our side, and I don't see why he couldn't do that. He has time to do that. That would be a wonderful project for him. So I'm going to bring that up. And also, just again, to remind people that if you can volunteer for any of this, it would be an exciting, you know, work to do. Again, write to Vincent Renouard, spelled R-E-Y-N-O-U-A-R-D, at gmx.fr, and ask them about it, and tell them what you're capable of doing, and see how you can help with this, because it just doesn't seem like we should be. We certainly have plenty of talent around.
Yes.
Okay. Very good. Well, we've got a few more minutes before the break. Let me get back over to my SkyCon page here. Sorry, I know what's happening. Oh, 60 seconds before the break. Okay, and then we'll take our 5-minute break with a song by Mozart's aria by Mozart. It's going to be the one I've been using, which is by Moika. I think it's how you pronounce her name. Erdman, a soprano. So until then, when we get back, we will go into the story of Orador Sorglan. Right, Vincent? Can we do that?
Okay. No problem.
Yes, and then we'll find out from you what the latest is, and what you've got on your video that people should be buying, or they'll have to, or we should be getting one in English and other languages too. So I've got another friend who does a lot of translation. He loves you, Hasso Kastrup. He's translated some of your writings. So we'll see you in 5 minutes. Hold on, everyone.
Thank you.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is Saturday Afternoon with Carolyn Yeager, and my guests who are here now, thank goodness, are Vincent Renoir of Paris, France, and his delightful partner, Marie. And I've already said why I don't use Marie's last name. Marie, would you like to have your last name used or not?
Marie?
Yeah.
She prefers not to have a last name.
Very good. Okay, I didn't want to. I didn't know which way was right, but I thought that was the right way. Okay, so Vincent, now we are here at, we're now going to talk about Orador Sur Glane, and I do absolutely agree with you that it's very important. And, you know, I first read what you had on the internet, which someone had translated into English after your book was published, I guess, or sometime. It was very long, and I learned all about it then, and I was, you know, it really moved me a lot. And I could see, you know, I mean, it's clear to see that this story is one of these official cover-ups by the Allies, you know, about what happened during the war, and to blame everything on Germans and make Germans look real bad. And, of course, you so courageously took out after this, and it has been a main preoccupation with you, although you've done a lot of other revisionist work. So, and this is what you're saying when we went to the break, pretty much, that that you think it's very important too. That's why you work with it. So, what are you doing with it now?
I didn't understand what I do now.
Yes. What do you do now about what are you doing now about Orador Sur Glane? I mean, you're coming out with this new video, and what is new about it?
What is new about Orador Sur Glane?
Mm-hmm.
Is that?
Yes.
Well, since I published my book in 1997, I found some new arguments. I found new arguments because my the keeper of the official history of Oradour wanted to respond to me with new arguments, you know, and their arguments are very, very bad, and so I don't have a lot of new arguments from myself, but from the official story skippers, I have a lot of arguments to develop because they couldn't respond to my book, and they wanted to, without saying, they say, well, we have new arguments for that and that, but they wanted to respond to me, and they couldn't. So now, I am in a new position, and my position is, I had a new thesis about Orador Sur Glane. I put my thesis in the...
Yeah, and just let me say for the listeners, you mean thesis. I mean, you're saying thesis. You just pronounce it differently. You pronounce thesis is thesis.
Ah, perhaps.
Yeah.
Perhaps.
It's that TH thing.
Sorry. So, yeah. Now, in 1997, when I published my book, you know, it's always possible to make a new thesis, a thesis.
Well, we understand what you mean. We understand thesis is thesis, yeah.
Thesis about a thing. It's always possible. You can say that Napoleon didn't exist. You can say that man didn't go on in the moon. You can say all what you want, but the thing which is important is when you say that, the orthodox researchers can respond to you. And the only way to know if thesis is good, it to wait for the response of the specialist, historians, etc. So, in 1997, I had a new thesis about Oradour, but, well, you or French people, they didn't have, a lot of person didn't have to make confidence, to make confidence on me. Is that, we say like that?
Yes. Like that? Mm-hmm.
To make confidence. And now they couldn't respond to me. So I can prove, and in this video, it's what I prove. I can prove that my thesis is a good thesis because they couldn't respond to it. And it's why this video is very, very important. In 1997, nobody knew my thesis, so nobody could respond to me. But 13 years after, they had 13 years to respond to me, and they didn't. So this video point out that they didn't respond to me. For example, in 1996, I found old member of on of a bombarder of the bombarder of the, aircraft, you know, an old man on the of the RAF, Royal Air Force, you know.
Oh right, I read about that today.
Yes, you read. So I found an old man. His name was Len Cotton.
Len Cotton, yes. And that, folks, that also, Len Cotton is also written about with pictures on the scrapbook pages, .com. Yeah.
Yes. He have pages, on scrapbooks.com. Yes.
Yeah. I told people about that.
This man said he was in a plane, and this plane, had to land in France because it was destroyed by a German anti-aircraft player. Well, it doesn't matter. He had to land in France, and he landed at Confolens. That means not very far off Oradour. And this man said, "Well, with all my friends, we were taken to Oradour-sur-Glane, and after we escape, we go to Toulouse, and after Spain, and we escape from Spain, and we came back in England." And he said, "I went to Oradour, and I have been hide in Oradour, in the church of Oradour, the sacristy of the church of Oradour, with my friends for 2 days and a half." Well, in my book, I spoke about this man, Len Cotton. Mm-hmm. And I wait. I say, what will they respond to me about Len Cotton? Perhaps Len Cotton said lies to me. And if he said lies to me, it will be very easy to say, "Haha, Vincent Renoir wants to discover the truth, but an old man make fun of him with lies," you know.
Mm-hmm. But yes.
And when the director of the Museum of Oradour wrote his book in 1999, I think, I bought his book, and the first thing I made was to go to the index and to see where is Len Cotton. I wanted to know what he wrote about Len Cotton. And he didn't write a thing. Even the name of Len Cotton is not even mentioned one time in his book.
And which book is this now, did you say? I missed that kind of. It was
the book of the director of the Museum of Oradour. The book is called Oradour.
Is that the pamphlet that they were giving out, that they give out to tourists at the entrance, that this German fellow in, got one in 1965, or is that's just a, that's something different? This is a whole book?
I don't know. It's a new book. It's a new book. It was published in 1999, I think. So it's a new book. Okay?
Yeah.
It's not an old book.
Okay, I get you. That's right. That's right.
Published 3 years after mine. So, I say, he will have to respond to me about Len Cotton.
Right.
And it didn't even mention Len Cotton. That proof, and I say in my video, that proof that Len Cotton is right. But he's right. But in Oradour, they don't want, they keep silent about that. You know? It's one of my arguments. And I have now, because of internet, I made a new research, and with new technique of the new things to make video, to make draws.
The new software.
Yes, new software, etc. I made a lot of diagrams and drawing for explication. I found a lot of videos on YouTube, Dailymotion, etc. So now you have a video very, very much better even than my book, because I can tell I can take photos and explain what's the matter with this photo, etc., etc. It's 13 years after, we have a lot of possibilities we didn't have in 1997.
Right. Well, you know, in looking at the short video that's available right now, is I noticed that you were pointing out that all these victims from the church that were in the so-called fire, that they had their shoes on, that their shoes weren't burnt up. Their bodies were torn apart, but clothing and shoes and so on was not burned up, proving that there was an explosion there rather than a fire. Correct?
Yes, yes, mm-hmm. Yes. And now with internet, I found a lot of other photos from people who died in a fire and from people who died in an explosion. So now I can make a lot of comparison, you know?
That's right. That's very powerful, I think, because, of course, the story is that the Germans put those women and children in the church, and then they set fire to the church, and they all burned alive or something. Yeah.
Yes, because sometimes people say to me, oh, a fire or an explosion, what difference? What difference? And I say, no. Yes, they died. But if the explosion, if the SS made the explosion, we would, in France, we would have speak about this explosion very, very soon. But at the beginning, they wanted to hide this explosion. It's because the first witness of the church, Madame Ruffange, at the beginning, in her first testimonies, she wants to hide the explosion. So that proves that the explosion was not the fault of the SS. Because if it was the fault of the SS, Madame Ruffange, Mrs. Ruffange, would have said in June 1944, at the beginning, she would have said, well, I saw a lot, a very, very big explosion because the Waffen-SS put a bomb or I don't know what in the church. But she didn't say that. At the beginning, she said, no explosion. Or when you see all the corpses from the church, it's evident it's corpse, they died in one or many explosions. It's evident.
Okay, and this Madame Ruffange, She's, of course, she can't be alive anymore, I'm sure, but, you know, they put a lot of, she's like their key witness, right? And you don't think she was even in the church. Do you still think she wasn't in the church?
No, I think she wasn't in the church because I think that she hid when Waffen-SS came in the village. You know, the director of the Museum of Oradour made researches. And he could go in the archives. I didn't. I couldn't go to the archives because I had no authorization. But him, he could go to the archives. And he said that approximately more than 100 persons hide themselves in the village when the SS arrived. And I'm sure that all the resistance, the persons who belong to the resistance, hide or try to hide themselves. And I'm sure that Mrs. Ruffonch hides themselves, so she wasn't in the church. I am practically sure, but I can't demonstrate it. So, in my video, I don't speak about that.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, she was the key witness. I mean, would they have any kind of a case if it wasn't for her testimony? Would the town there or France or whatever have a real case against the SS if Madame Ruffonch if they didn't have her testimony? Was there enough from other people or other things besides her? How important is she to their case?
Well, you know, family Ruffonch was in the resistance.
Mm-hmm.
Because Len Cotton says that.
That's right. And you know, that's another point is that they say even today, as you already pointed out, I don't know if you did or not, but that these people, none of these people were in the resistance, none of the townspeople. And yet the truth is they were all cooperating and working with them. And that's the same thing on the Eastern Front when they say that all these villagers that were, you know, rounded up and so on, they were just innocent people. They weren't working with the partisans. In Russia, same business going on, right?
Oh yes. Mm-hmm. I think that same business were going on, and you know, today we say that in the Eastern Front they burned villages, they killed women, children, etc. Yes, it's true, but because everyone was in resistance. So the German soldiers couldn't in the Eastern Front. They couldn't make in another way. They had to burn village and they had to kill. But in France,
otherwise, because if they didn't, I used to not quite understand that. I was a little slow, but you know, they were moving east, and if they didn't destroy what was behind them, they left all those people who were pretending to be innocent village people, but were really partisans and working against them, they were going to have all this enemy in the rear. And you can never have the enemy in the rear, can you?
Yes, sure.
Right.
absolutely true. And it seems we don't understand now. People don't understand that you can't have enemy in the rear. It's impossible. So, but in France, mm-hmm. it was very, very different. Sometimes people say, "Well, Oradour is you have only three or four villages destroyed by SS." Yes, it's true because in France, resistance was not the same that the resistance is in the Eastern Front, you know, and in France, German soldiers didn't have to kill women, children, only in few exceptions you have. But, you know, for example, at Maillé, another destroyed village, you don't have 1,000 people die, slaughtered, you know. You have sometimes 15 or 50 or perhaps 100, but it's the maximum. Or in Oradour, it's an exception in France. It's because we can say at the beginning, it's strange. This story is strange. Why Waffen-SS destroy this village? We have to ask a question. If in France you had 100 village destroyed or 1,000 village destroyed, yes, well, we could say Waffen-SS did that. It was routine for us, for them. They destroy whatever they found. But in France, we have only one village. So I said, do you think it's normal? It's strange. And this story of Oradour, we have to review it because it's too strange. And you know, Madame Ruffange is a key witness, but it's evident that it's a false witness. She didn't. She comment? How?
No, that's right. False. Yes, a false witness.
Oh, it's a false witness. Yes, she didn't tell the truth. It's evident. So, Ruffange family was in the resistance, and so Mrs. Ruffange, even if she lost her two daughters in the slaughter, she made a false testimony to protect the resistance. I think it's now it's evident. It's evident, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's evident to me. So what it is that they just don't want this story to be accepted, and they always want to find ways to make the Germans out to be people committing atrocities. So the two things come together, and they have their story, and they set it up with lying witnesses. And they're now trying to protect it all these years. And you are the one who is making the biggest inroads, and so, you know, they've gone after you quite a bit. Will this new DVD get you into more trouble, you know, added to what you're already in, or is it just... Will it not?
Well, I think that I will be in trouble, but it will be very difficult for them, you know, because in France, you can't review history about crimes against humanity. But Oradour is not a crime against humanity, because SS, even if you believe the official story, you know, SS killed person not because they were French or they were Jews or they were they were black, they were white, so it was. Because the official history said they made a slaughter because they wanted to say to the resistance, stop now, if you don't stop, we will destroy other villages. So it's not a crime against humanity, it's a war crime. And in France, you can be a revisionist about raw crimes.
Really?
Yes, really. At the beginning, when
and it's I, also called a reprisal. I mean, it also comes under the category what they did there as reprisal action, and that was legal, right?
Yes, you can. Yes. It's the anti-revisionist law forbid only, forbid only to deny a crime against humanity. So at the beginning, when they wanted to put me on trial, they said, there is a anti-revisionist law, and you are a revisionist about a crime against humanity. But after, they found that it was impossible, because I can't be a denier of crimes against war crimes. So they said to me, no. It's, you are not a revisionist, but you made an apology of war crimes, an apology. Uh-huh. And I said, but I can't make an apology of a crime that I deny. It's impossible. I say the crime didn't exist. It's not an apology. Mm-hmm. But they say, the judge says, it doesn't matter, you will be put on trial. And I have been sentenced first time to 3 months prison, you know,
mm-hmm.
for apology. I made an appeal, we say in France, I think it's the same, it's in America. I said, no, I want to be judged again. And I was put on trial a second time, and they sentenced me to 1 year of prison. I went, in America, you have, the biggest court of justice, I don't know how you
say. Yeah, the Supreme Court.
Yes, you have the Supreme Court. In France, it's Court of Cassation. It's our Supreme Court. So I went in the Supreme Court, and in 20 lines, they said, okay, Vincent Renoir is not a good person. Yes, yes, we agree. But it's a war, it's a crime, it's a war crime. So he can review a war crime in 20 lines. It was 5 years after my first sentence, you know. Mm-hmm. I had to fight for 7 years only for a judge to say, okay, it's a war crime. It's a war crime. He can deny a war crime. So now, today in France, you can be a revisionist on Oradour because it's a war crime. But I am sure that they will try to forbid my video. They will find other reasons. For example, I'm sure that they will say, oh, you take a picture which is copyrighted, you know. You take this picture which is copyrighted. You took this music which is copyrighted. And I think that they will find something to... perhaps to forbid my video, or perhaps they will say, well, there's not a lot of publicity for this video, and a few people knows this video, so keep silent, please. Don't make a fuss. Don't put Vincent Renoir in trial. It will be publicity for him. So don't make a thing. For the moment, for that moment, I am waiting. I don't know what will matter. Perhaps on Monday French inspectors in my house. They will take my computer. Perhaps. But perhaps no. I'm not sure. But
that's a terrible thing. I think it's just an awful blow to have your computer taken, to have them search your house and take all kinds of materials out of your house and never give them back to you. Or if they give you your computer back, it's usually ruined and it doesn't have what you had in it anymore. Now, this is real distressing.
Ah, yes. They already seized 4 of my computers. They never gave me back. And on Oradour, they took in my house in Brussels, I think they took 100 kilograms of archives. Mm-hmm. And they never give back to me. So it's when you are a revisionist in France, you are always in trouble because you say, well, what will matter tomorrow morning at 6 o'clock? Perhaps they will come in my house, they will take, because you know, even if they know that they will lose, they put you on trial. Because yeah. For them, it's free. But for you, you lose your computer, your books, your archives. You have to pay for a lawyer. Well, so it doesn't matter. They say, well, we put you on trial. Yes, we know you will win because we can't put you on trial, but it doesn't matter. You will be sentenced one time and two times and three times perhaps, and you will have to pay for a lawyer. You will have convocation to the tribunal, to the police. You will waste a lot of time, a lot of money, and they fight us like that because they don't respond to us, but it's always troubles with police, with justice, and I lose a lot of money. For example, in the next month, in May, I will have a new trial, and only to know the date of the trial, and I had to ask for a lawyer, for a counselor, or no, for lawyer. I think it's that, and I had to pay $1,500. You know.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's called harassment. You know, yes. They're just continual harassment. Which, even if somebody isn't actually put in prison for a term, I mean, this can just be as bad. I mean, it's just as bad. If they left your stuff alone and just you had to spend one year in prison, you'd be better off than if they're constantly taking everything from you and dragging you into court.
Yes, sure. It's the way they fight us, and it's harassment. And you know, you can say, well, if I go to prison, it would be a good publicity for me. Oh yes, it's a good publicity, but you know, but now, for example, I went to prison 2 years ago. Well, it was a good publicity for me, but now it's finished. I am like 3 years before. I have the same number of readers. I have the same number of persons who give me money, etc., etc. It's finished. You are an hero for 1 month, 2 months, and after it's finished.
You are so right. This is how it does. It's like the whole celebrity thing. And when somebody gets in trouble, when a revisionist gets in trouble, everybody's writing about it, everybody's talking, everybody's, you know, supporting him, oh, what a brave man, and this and that. And then, you're right, it passes, and they're looking at something else and talking about something else. And there you are. You know, you haven't gained from it in the long run. So we need to do a better job. We need to have more people who are not just looking at the current news and reacting to it, but people who are going to be supporters and stick through it, stick with it without, you know, having it be all exciting news and so on. You know, just the day-to-day drudgery of doing all this work. That's what we have to have more people like that. And it just reminds me of how they do this on purpose. They get people, they get us addicted to news and the news cycle and whatever new is happening, and they make sure there's new headlines all the time so that we never do stick with anything except, you know, special people who are really working at it. You know, we're just attracted here to there to there. And that's part of the enemy's agenda. It's, I mean, part of their tactics.
Oh, yes, yes. And you know, if one day I don't want to, but if one day I must stop fighting, it won't be because of the Jews. It will be because of all the white people who didn't help me enough. It's terrible to say, but we have a very, very little help in France. I don't know what's the matter in Germany, but I think it's the same in America. But in France, it's awful. We don't have any help. When I publish a video, well, 2,000 or 3,000 persons, people, 3,000 people looks at this video and say, well, wonderful, wonderful, very good, very good. But after nothing. What do you think? Do you think we can publish this video without working a lot of in a video? We have to buy documentation, to buy archives, or to go to see archives in Paris, in Strasbourg. But no, it doesn't matter. So it's because I think I don't know how revisionism will be in France in 20 years. I don't know, and I don't want to know because think it would be very sad.
Well, tell us about France. I mean, I don't have a very clear picture. So is there any way to compare? But you're saying that the French people are not very brave or very into this, that they're mostly conforming to the, and do they really believe it, or they just don't want to stir anything up? How do they feel about it?
Well, I'm sure that, you know, if you know that a trust is not won't be useful for you, you don't believe this trust. And I think that today, in France, you can have petrol in your car, you can eat a lot, all the supermarkets are full, we can have electricity 24 hours a day, we have good roads, we have good hospitals, so it's working in France. There's no problem. Yes, we have a lot of immigrants, perhaps, but our society is working. So a lot of persons, a lot of people are happy like that. They have cell phones, large screen. Well, so they don't want to believe a thing which bother them, you know. They don't want to believe it. I'm sure that, for example, you know, when I made my first video on Oradour, I was in the church, and suddenly, a young girl, she was perhaps 15 or 16, said to her parents, "Oh, why the confessional didn't burn?" you know? Mm-hmm. And, well, I didn't say a thing because I was making my video. I had to hide me because they knew me in Oradour, so I didn't want to make a fuss in the church. But this little girl, she was 16, 15, 16. She looked at this confessional and she said, but why it didn't burn? And you know, when I made my first researches on Oradour, mm-hmm. it was in 1991, you had a camping. There was a camping in Oradour. And I stay in this camping for 2 weeks. But a lot of person only stay at the camping for 24 years, for one day. They came on at night, they slept, on the day after they went to Oradour, and after they go away, you know, they went away after.
Now, what is this? This is a lodging place, you're saying?
No, it's not.
The campaign?
If it's a large place?
No, lodging, I said. What is a campaign? Place where you, like a hotel?
I don't know. It was a camping, not a hotel. Huh? It was a camping. But now you don't have this camping anymore. It's finished. You only have hotels now, you know?
Okay. So, but you're saying you stayed for 2 weeks, huh?
2 weeks in the camping. And
camping.
Camping, yes.
Oh, I got it. I'm sorry.
I have a...
No, that's my... I couldn't quite figure that out. Okay, you were camping, yeah.
Yes, I was in the camping. I was camping because there was a large camping. But now there's no camping anymore. Well, on the evening, I put my research in a little book, and I had a microphone and a tape, and I put my all my impressions, etc. on this tape, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes people listen to me, and after they went to see me, and they say, "Well, you do researches about Oradour?" Yes, I do, and I'd explain. I say, you know, no, the church didn't explode. It's not possible. You have all the bells. They are not melted. They are melted, but strangely melted. You have the confessional which didn't burn, etc. And I'd explain to them what was my thesis. And practically every time, on the day after, they went to see me and they said to me, "You're right. It's impossible." So, you know, people, when you take them individually, they believe. They say, "Yes, wait, it's not possible." But sometimes, after, they say, "Well, but if it's right, if the Waffen-SS didn't kill people, and after, if there was no gas chamber, but the evil is perhaps not the evil, and the good ones are perhaps not the good ones, and it's impossible for them, because if they know that if they believe, if they become revisionists, they will have to believe in other things politically, etc. And that they don't want. Because they like our society, they like cell phones, etc. They like freedom, they like consumption society. And so they don't want to believe other things. So,
well, I agree with you. I see it exactly the same way. And I say, you know, it always comes down to that it's all political. People might see that you're right in the things that you're telling them about the details, but if it means that they have to change their political views and go move to the right or say that you know, the National Socialism wasn't so bad, or things like that. That's where they draw the line. So they prefer to stick with the lies and stay where they are. And like you say, they think society now is good. And they're afraid that they would have these strict laws that they'd have to follow under a different form.
The only thing that will be able to change mind if a very, very large crisis, ecological crisis, I don't know what, but people, they must be hungry, they must be without petrol, without food, without telesales phone, without large screens, etc. And on that day, they will say, okay, we were wrong, and now we will have to think rights, you know. But until this crisis don't arrive, there will be no chance for the revisionism to triumph. It's impossible. People doesn't want all the people in France, they don't want to believe to revisionism.
So would you say that France is less revisionist than some other European countries, or how would you compare it then to the United States? About the same, or are they less revisionistly inclined? Is revisionism less popular in France than in some other European countries, and also compared to the United States? You have an opinion on that?
No, I don't have. I don't know what's the matter in the United States, you know.
Well, the same thing that you said about the French. You know, it's exactly the same thing. You know, they don't want to change their political point of view, which is, you know, pretty overarching. Pretty overarching change.
Oh yes, I'm sure. It's because my friend Jérôme Bourbon, a journalist and chief redactor of Rivarol, said to me, you know, even if tomorrow in France, Loi Guesso falls, you know. If there are no more Guesso law in France, it won't change a thing. Because in the United States, you are free to speak. Well, but it's nothing.
That's right.
So in France, it would be the same. I would like, I would like to have the freedom of speech, because I don't want to go to prison. I don't want to pay for a lawyer. I don't want to, etc., etc. I don't want to see my computer size, etc., etc. But I'm sure that if tomorrow I can speak freely, that won't change a thing.
Well, they still won't listen to you. Yes. Yeah. They'll just ignore you. Okay, what about this thing about the records of that trial in Bordeaux that have been sealed, that were sealed for 100 years? Do you think that that won't be until, 2043? Or is it 2053 that's going to be open? Do you think that will make any difference? And, or again, would people not care anyway?
Well, First thing, you have a law in France, archives like Oradour's archives, and they have to be sealed for 100 years, you know? Mm-hmm. So, it's normal. Until 2053.
Three.
Yes, read it. But it's not very, very true, because, for example, the president of the Museum of Oradour could see all that archives, you know. You can have an authorization, you know.
Yes,
you can. But, you know, in France, we say, vous avez à montrer patte blanche. You must be a political correct person. If I ask for that, they will say no, you know.
Sure, right. But therefore, they know what's in there. Of course, a lot of people think when the time is up, they still won't. They'll find some other reason to keep it.
Perhaps, but even I'm not sure because in 2053 it will be I don't know. Perhaps they will keep them. They will keep them, saying that you have negationists and we have to preserve memory. Yes, perhaps they will keep them for another reason. Or perhaps they will burn them, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's possible because in Lyon, in France, you have the library of a university burnt, and some person said to me, you know, they burned the library because there were a lot of books about Jewish question, very, very embarrassing for them, you know.
Hmm. Well, what do you think? Go ahead.
Okay, no, you can, sure.
Oh, well, do you think the decline in religious faith has had any effect on a lack of interest in revisionism, or does it not really compute that way?
Religious faith?
In France, yes.
Well, I don't know. I see. Now I'm sure that, you know, France is not a Christian country now. You have a de-Christianization of France, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that when people lose their religion, they like having a new religion. And you know now, I think that we have a new religion, this Shoah Holocaust religion. No. I think that the future world religion will be Holocaust religion.
And so that would equate to something like a no genocide type, you know, as long as you brotherhood, you know, love everyone, we're all brothers and so on, and no hate, you know, no.
Yes,
no,
yes.
Oh, that whole thing, that's what the Holocaust religion is trying
yes,
to put
I'm
forward.
I'm sure. It would be no more boundaries, no more race, no more religion, only a very large brotherhood with the memory of the Holocaust. I think it will be in France. It will be like that, and in Europe, it will be like that. Yes. Go ahead, please.
Well, I was just going to say, you know, that there's a story today or yesterday about Obama, his final meetings in Israel. Our President Obama has been in Israel. And, of course, you know, he spent all this time about the Yad Vashem Holocaust Memorial and gave a long speech there. And he was wearing his little kippah and so on. And the things he said, you know, they're just beyond, almost beyond belief. He said it's almost like it was all written by the people in Israel, you know, the Israeli government, for him to say he covered all the topics that we just mentioned there about what this Holocaust religion is all about. And he's just totally, you know, subservient to that. And I was thinking, you know, if when he goes to France, do they take him to Oradour-sur-Glane? Well, they're not that bad. They don't do that. Or if he went to some other If he went to China, do they take him to some massacre place? But every time he or anybody else goes to Israel, they have to do all this bowing and scraping at the Yad Vashem and talk about the Holocaust. As though it's a universal, you know, it affects everyone in the world. And you know, and so you're right. I mean, it is treated exactly as the New World religion.
Oh, yes. You saw that in 2025, là. When there was the at Auschwitz, you know, mm-hmm. you had a very, very big commemoration at Auschwitz. And I made an article. I read all the Francophone press and Anglophone press, you know, press in French and press in English. Mm-hmm. And I found a lot of texts demonstrating that Holocaust is a new religion now.
It's yes, true, I true. Know. And you wrote something about that. And actually, Hans Kastrup on his show blogger, he translated that, and it's there. And I thought that was one of the best pieces that he's got there by you. It's very good. People should go there. We've only got about 30 seconds now, so I want to let you say goodbye, Vincent, and Marie, too.
Yes.
Thank you so much, both of you, for coming on. Hi, Marie.
Thanks.
Well, we've got still 30 seconds, so anything you want to say to the listeners and remind them where to send donations?
Oh, yes, thank you. If you want to give us a donation, it will be very, 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 we will be very, very happy.
Okay.
And I say bye-bye to America.
All right. Well, we have mostly Americans listening to us, but we have people all over the world. Well, Marie and Vincent, thank you so much. We'll talk to you again another time, right?
Yes, no problem.
All right. Okay, bye, listeners.
Right.
Thanks for listening. And be sure to visit Carolyn's website at carolynyager.com.